our work. It is the 4th of February, 2021, if you can believe it. Good for us to be together. We haven't been together in a little bit. I'm going to open our meeting and I'm going to do a brief roll call. Before I do that, though, it's Black History Month. And it is a month where we recognize contributions of the African Americans to this nation and actually internationally. What I've been doing is sharing quotes in meetings, opening it with a quote and closing with a quote. So if it's okay with you, I'll do that. From Rosa Parks, she is attributed to having said, "You must never be fearful about what you are doing when it is right." How appropriate, how fitting for the work that we're engaged in. So let's do a real quick roll call and we will get going. This is a meeting that's open to the public. It is not a public meeting. That means that you are invited in to hear and to listen to the work that the Bond Oversight Committee for the Portland Metro, for the Portland Housing Bureau funds. I'm sorry about that. You're invited to hear the work and watch and engage with the work. If there are testimonies or comments that you'd like to weigh in, we ask you to keep it associated with the meeting that's happening today. However, if there are other things you're concerned about or questions you have related to housing, you are more than encouraged to reach out to Portland Housing Bureau members. And so members of the Portland Housing Bureau, if you would identify yourselves by merely waving at the camera. All the Portland Housing Bureau folks, wonderful. Thank you. Now let's do our roll call so we can get it going. Susan Evans.
Bond Site Overcommittee member here.
Good to see you. Alan Lazo.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Alan Lazo from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and I'm a Bond Oversight Committee member. And I, like Dr. Holt, also like to recognize the contributions of Black and African Americans in the history that we hold at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and the work that Dr. King was doing in the open housing movement in Chicago that really led to the work of fair housing following his assassination in 1968. So thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And then Annalise.
Good morning, everyone. Annalisa Curler, Affordable Housing Bond Oversight Committee member.
Wonderful. Did I miss any bond oversight committee?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Struwell. Hi. It's been a little while. I use he, him, and his pronouns. I'm the community development director at Apano. And I'm on the oversight committee.
Todd, I was looking for your lovely face and did not catch the snow scene there. So, welcome. Director Callahan, I believe you wanted to share some thoughts.
Good morning. It's just so I wanted to welcome everyone to the meeting. I also wanted to make sure that the Bond Oversight Committee members were aware that our new liaison from Commissioner Ryan's office, as of the beginning of the year, we are within the portfolio of Commissioner Dan Ryan, and his liaison to the Housing Bureau, Charity Montez, is joining us for the meeting. I just want to make sure everyone knew Charity was on the call and who she was. I don't know if Charity, you wanted to just introduce yourself at all. I know I'm probably putting you on the spot, but just thought I'd give you a chance to say anything in my intro too.
Thank you, Director Callahan. Charity Montez, I use she and they pronouns. Like Director Callahan said, I am the liaison to the Housing Bureau. I'm a senior policy advisor for Commissioner Dan Ryan. I'm super excited about your work, actually. This is a dream portfolio, and nice to see you, Jennifer. some familiar faces. Love that. So just really wanting to be a sponge and excited to be here. So thank you.
I just also wanted to say, I think today is really a day that has a lot of really good information for you to dig into. Some great presentations. And even since the last time we met, just a quarter ago, we've moved four projects. The team has moved four projects into a financial close, which means they are either under construction or about to be under construction. And you'll hear more about that this morning, but I wanted to specifically acknowledge, before we kick it off, the very, very hardworking team that has been part of keeping this engine moving forward, even while a pandemic, which has made things more challenging, and all of our partners who have done all the work to keep things on time. We weren't sure that where we were going to be in March. I think you remember when we first talked in April about where we were in the pandemic. And I think it's really something to be proud of and acknowledge in the moment of times of so many things that may not look so bright. And so it just means all of these units will be available in the coming years. And we're just very excited about that. And I just wanted to also thank you for your oversight of the work. And there's also some good financial news coming up, which is also something that I know, Alan, I saw you perk up there, Alan, that we also hadn't anticipated. And so I wanted to thank our finance and development team for keeping such a close eye on the financial resources. And that's all I wanted to say this morning. And so hopefully we'll get to talk about the great work that's going on and be able to answer any of the questions you might have.
Thanks, Director. Appreciate that so very much. We've opened, we've gone through roll call, and we're about to launch. Let me just ask or encourage, so many of us live in this Zoom space right now, to make sure that if there's anything going on in the background and you're not sharing or talking, that you keep your background muted. Not that you have to stay on mute, but just to control any noise that might compete with the meeting. So in light of that, let us go into our first agenda item, and our bond project progress.
I'm sorry. Dr. Holt, before we get there, we do have some meeting notes from October that we want to make sure that the BOC reviews and gets approved.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you. Was there any need to take time to review the notes, or have you already reviewed the notes and ready to make a determination in regard to it? Bond oversight.
I read the notes and they look thorough to me, and I move we accept them as they've I'll been.
Second that.
Moved and seconded. If everybody's in agreement, just merely give for the sake of recording, I'll call you by name and have you say yes or aye. So Susan.
Yes.
Alan.
Aye.
Annalise.
Aye.
Todd.
Old stain since I was not present.
Okay. Well, it's been moved. It's been supported. There is a consensus to move forward with the notes as presented. Thanks for that capture, Tanya. Appreciate that.
No problem.
All right. Moving forward, we will go then into our first agenda item, Jill.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. Jill Chen, Portland Housing Bureau, Housing Investment and Portfolio Finance, Portfolio Preservation Manager. And next slide, please, Tanya. I'll cover a quick overview of where we are. As Shannon mentioned, we've had some great progress in all of the projects, actually. Since our last meeting in October, we have had two projects close. This is Cathedral Village and 115 and Division. Cathedral Village closed just last month, January 21st, and 115 and Division closed October 29th, 2020. So that one is actually, I'm hoping, will be ready and opening by the end of this calendar year. And I wanted to say a great shout out for the team. We had a lot of staffing changes, and that was tremendous for them to have closed the projects during a pandemic and being onboarded at the same time. So wanted to shout out for the team, especially the closers and the underwriters. And you'll note that you have a copy of the dashboard. This is sort of the one page, big page item. And it's in red, and a few things I want to highlight. which is in addition to the closings we've had, all of the items in red are the new updates. And we're very pleased for a few items. The first one is our 30% AMI, area median income targets, was increased to 628 units. We are still exceeding every one of our target metrics. And our, let me just go down to where we are in target metrics. The goal was for 1,300 units to be produced. Currently, we're on target to produce 1,490 units. On the 30% area median income, our target was 600, and we're now at 628 units. Our goal for 300 permanent supportive housing units, that is still at 313, so we're still on target and exceeding. And our goal for family size units at 650 has been increased to 691, so slight increase. So you'll see that there were some slight differences that are shown in red. Any questions, or should I just continue going down? Okay, next slide, please. As mentioned earlier, we had two new closings, and that was Cathedral Village and Crescent Court, or 115 in Division. We have a, over the next 3 months, we will have another four closings. Hayutu Lixom, which is on here, that is a project that was approved by City Council in January and sponsored by CDP and NEA. Las Adelitas, which is also approved in December by City Council, and that is scheduled to close March 11th. Hayutu Lixom is actually, I believe, on the phone today, and they'll be making a short presentation for everyone. So it's great to see so much movement as we come towards all the great work you've done with us in moving these projects forward. Next slide, please. Coming up after the immediate sort of Hayutu Lixom and Las Adelitas closing, we will have Stark Street and the Susan Emmons. And also we forgot to put another one on there, was the West Wind. All three, Stark Street, Susan Emmons, and West Wind are targeted to go to City Council on March 17th. And they will be closing in quick succession with West Wind on April 15th. Stark Street, we think, is early May, and Susan Emmons towards the end of April. So it's gonna be a quick closing. So we're gonna be very pleased to come back in next quarter and tell you all the great closings and have more projects for presentation. After that, all those closings, then we will have sort of a lull until this summer, where there will be the rest of the projects will be starting to come to City Council and close. That will be 3000 Powell, Annaman, and the Joyce Hotel. As Shannon mentioned, we have had some new, I think, great news. Despite of COVID, during the CARES Act that was passed in December 2020, Congress fixed the low-income housing tax credit's applicable rate at 4% fixed. It had been drifting down towards about 3.7 or so. So the impact on this had been, I think, a boon to our projects, because that meant the low-income housing tax credits, which we had mentioned we were concerned about because of pricing issues, actually became more solidified. And they were able to generate more low-income housing tax credits. And our LIHTC investors are actually honoring the commitments in their letters of intent. So we saw, for example, was in Cathedral Village, PHB actually got returned about $1.5 million. So in that big spreadsheet, the dashboard, you'll see a note saying the red where it showed we needed less than, you know, $15 million. So Alan, I see you smiling, so that's great. it's nice to see that we're able to leverage our bond dollars even more because of the situation that occurred thanks to Congress. Rarely say thanks to Congress. And so we are looking at being able to potentially get some more bond funds back. But before we get bond funds back, we're looking at how PHB and our partners can improve the durability and sustainability on all of these projects. You know, for 99 years, we want these to be solid projects. And I know a number of our projects had to do a lot of value engineering. The second that we're looking at is stabilizing the projects with additional reserves, be it operating reserves or maintenance reserves, because again, for the durability and sustainability and the operations of it in the long term. And what we're also, thirdly, we're seeing is that on some of the projects, our developers have asked for actually less rent from the tenants than the 60% area median income. They're coming in and saying, we may not want to rent regulate at 50%, but we really like to be able to offer that, especially in this current environment. So when we look at the numbers and saying, well, do we want some more money back or we want a little bit deeper reach? That is, again, a judgment call, but we're trusting that as we reach out to the BIPOC community and those in need, some of them really would like to be able to reach the 50% AMI residents. And the last was what happened in Cathedral Village. We got some money back. So under those four circumstances, we're sort of weighing how to best use the boon we got from Congress with LIHTC. What are some other things we're seeing in the market right now? Is that costs have continued to increase, unfortunately. In particular, the situation since last year with cost of construction hasn't really abated, it's still increasing. One of the things we have seen that's sort of skyrocketed is insurance. Insurance costs has tripled in some cases on a project we recently closed that was not in the bonds. What we are also seeing is that because there is a lot of affordable housing projects from throughout the state in the other jurisdictions as well as PHB, that the Oregon Housing and Community Services have become very backlogged. Most recently, for example, on the Joyce Hotel, Joyce went to the SEPA team, went to OHCS and asked for a time in which the bonds could be issued. This is OHCS finance could be issued. And they said, well, they're looking at October of 2021. And this was done almost, you know, this was done at the end of last year. So the timing has become stretched out and we're getting a little, how to describe it, trying to figure out how we can best manage and work with our development partners so it doesn't impact their development timeline. Any questions before I pass off to my colleague, Mike Johnson? Okay, that's it for my presentation. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Jill. Mike?
Good morning. Go to the next slide there. Thank you, Tanya. So actually do have some changes both in the slide and the report this quarter. You'll notice that we now, for the first time in several months, have a new bond project expense showing up in the top table, and that's showing the initial bond proceed disbursements for the Crescent Court project. So that, of course, also starts adjusting on the commitment side how much money is in the Crescent Court project also. So you'll see that that number has gone down from last time. So things are starting to move. So if you look at the graph that's on the screen in front of you right now, you'll notice that we've now gone up over 21% of the bond proceeds having been spent now that we're working on our first gap financing project. And by association, the committed amounts have gone down. Of course, as we do other bond solicitations, that number will change. That number is also going to change based on the information that Jill just shared with you, which will possibly adjust the reserved amount and the remaining amounts also. So there's a lot starting to move now. Another amount I want to draw your attention to is the interest in credits. As I've been telling you for several months now, as we've got bonds, the bonds sold and the proceeds are sitting in debt managed cash with the city's treasury division, that number is growing. That credit amount is starting to approach $1 million now. So that's also going to be good for future projects. So again, just more news on how the funds are starting to move out to the projects. Happy to answer any questions.
Great, thanks, Mike. Questions from the Bond Oversight Committee. Any questions?
Hey, Dr. Holt.
Yeah.
This is Alan Lazo. I was actually going to just make a couple comments about what Jill had said, and also it probably pertains to Mike also. So really appreciate the work that you all are doing. And I would agree with some of the statements you made, Jill, about, I mean, I think it's fantastic that you saw this stabilization of the LIHTC market. I mean, that's a big deal for what we were facing, but it's also offset by this whole continued question about construction costs, right? And so, you know, I think we need to be cautious moving forward, but I would also support what you said about reinvesting in both going deeper on the affordability as well as the sustainability and quality in the units. So that's what I would say about, you know, those efficiencies that we're seeing, because we also, you know, when as Mike said, when we look at what we still have in financials, you know, we're still not, I mean, we still got the reserves there, and then there's still the remaining bond funds. So, you know, I think it seems like we remain in a pretty good position, you know, given what we could have been facing with some of these things that were so unknown. So, you know, I continue to keep my fingers crossed in lots of different ways, but that sounds positive. I think it's great that you all are thinking about, you know, is there ways that we might be able to make these projects more robust for the folks that we're serving? And given that, you know, that things are at least stable for the moment is kind of the way I would frame it. So not really questions, I guess comments. So thanks.
Thank you, Alan. Any other comments or questions? All right. Well, thanks, Jill. Thanks, Mike. We appreciate it. Take care. Have a great rest of the day, unless you're going to hang out and stay with us in this robust and essential meeting. Love to have you. Project updates. Project teams. I don't know who's taking the lead. I have no name.
So I will go ahead and share this next part, Dr. Holt. So good morning, everyone. Jennifer Chang with the Portland Housing Bureau, she, her pronouns, and it's great to see the committee members this morning. I just wanted to share on behalf of the team a very brief update on how the Bureau is continuing to coordinate with our jurisdictional partners and community partners to make sure that the Portland bond funds continue to, or will be aligned and continue to be aligned with upcoming new resources from the Metro Supportive Housing Services Measure Funds, or the SHS measure. So as many of you are aware, that the SHS measure was passed by Portland Region voters in 2020, just last year, and is projected to generate as much as $248 million a year across the Tri-County region once it's fully implemented. Our current projections is that Multnomah County is estimated to receive $52 million in the first year of operation, which will be next fiscal year, so starting in this upcoming July. And then after that, approximately $100 million a year once it's fully implemented. And the Joint Office of Homeless Services at the City-County Joint Office of Homeless Services is the entity that will be administering the funds on behalf of the Multnomah County region. And the funds are really focused on reducing chronic and short-term homelessness and racial disparities. And there's a variety of types of services that these funds can be used for, including supportive housing, rent assistance, supportive services and also shelter or street outreach services. But there is a definite high priority of 75% of the funds to be really focused on serving households who are experiencing chronic homeless, like long-term homelessness, and have living with a disabling condition and very low incomes. So the 30% area median income and below. And then the remaining 25% of the funds can be spent in serving kind of more broadly the homeless population and many of the service needs. So we just wanted to give this moment to give a brief update related to this measure, just that PHB is continuing to coordinate very closely with the Joint Office, with Metro, Home Forward, and our community partners, just to ensure that the SHS measure funds will continue to be aligned in our production of affordable housing, in particular, our supportive housing units. So I'm glad to take any questions if people have some.
Any comments from the Bond Oversight Committee? Thanks, Jennifer.
I think I pass it on to Tanya.
Tanya.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tanya Wolfersberger. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a housing program coordinator here at the Housing Bureau. And I just wanted to provide a brief update to the Oversight Committee about our starting to work on our annual progress report for calendar year 2020. So this is just to provide you a brief estimated timeline of when we anticipate finishing the progress report, getting a draft for you all to review, and then presenting that out to the public, including hopefully sharing that with City Council later this spring. So it's just kind of a heads up that we're working on it, and to give you an opportunity to kind of track our work in that regard, and know that we'll be sending a draft your way fairly soon. So want to make sure that there aren't any questions or comments from the Oversight Committee on this work. Okay, well, we'll be in touch soon. You'll be hearing from myself and Martha Calhoun about this project. So stay tuned.
Thank you. Hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Excellent. Other updates? Project team updates?
Yeah, so I'm happy to be able to welcome two project teams to the Oversight Committee meeting this quarter. We have project teams from both the Hiyu-Tuxlim Project and Westwind Project. Just want to be everyone aware that each team will do a presentation, and then we'll have a short time after each presentation for questions and discussion, should you have any, before we move on to the next. So I'll just want to make you aware that is how we're going to proceed. And then without further ado, I'd like to welcome the team for Hiyu-Tuxlim. I believe we have folks here from both Community Development Partners and from NEA, and I will hand it over to them.
Hi, Lucy. I don't think we can hear you. You're still on mute.
I was just about to say that. Thanks, Jill.
Can you all hear me now?
Yes.
Sorry about that. Thank you for having us today to present an update on Hiyu-Tuxlim. My name is Lucy Corbett, and I am a development manager with Community Development Partners. I'm joined by Keith Ferrante, who's the project manager with NEA. And we are very excited to provide an update on this project. It is a joint development between our two organizations. And we are the co-developers and will be the both co-long-term owners of the project. Hayutilutsum translates into many nations in the Chinook Wawa language. This project is located on Northeast Prescott, right near the intersection of Prescott and Cully Boulevard in the Cully neighborhood. It is in close proximity to NEA and CDP's other two joint developments in the Cully neighborhood, as well as close to NEA's campus in Cully. So it's great to have those proximities to be able to share resources and have easy access to NEA's campus, where they have a lot of additional resources for residents in the way of programs, a high school, and many other cultural activities. The project is focused on serving Native American families and individuals, and also includes 9 permanent supportive housing units. It is one of the sites that was purchased by the Housing Bureau with the bond. It currently is a single family home. And so we are adding 50 units here to a pretty compact site, but one that we believe is poised for higher density in the future. It's also really well located in terms of being highly accessible by public transit. The TriMet bus line runs right down Prescott. It's also right across the street from the Albertsons grocery store. So another great amenity for our residents. Can you advance to the next slide, please? So here's just a quick snapshot of the unit mix here. We have 20 family sized units in our 2 and 3 bedroom units. As I mentioned, 9 permanent supportive housing units, which will be paired with project-based vouchers from the joint office. Our resident services providers are NARA and NEA, and NARA will be specifically providing the services for those PSH units, and then NEA will have the overall resident services. It's estimated to house 119 people. Next slide, please. So here is a overview of the sources, $7.9 million in Portland housing bonds, $6.4 million in low-income housing tax credits from the 4% credit, a $4.2 million permanent loan, for a developer fee, OHCS funds, that is from the multifamily energy program. So funds to support energy efficiency and sustainability upgrades. And then we have a few other grants. We received a grant from Energy Trust to add solar to the project. And we also received a grant from the Cully Boulevard Alliance. Next slide. Currently, we are in the process of deconstructing the house that's currently on the site. That's in progress now. We're also going to be doing some site clearing of trees, just getting it ready to build on as soon as we close. We're in the final stages of permitting with the City of Portland, and we're in the final stages of our HUD subsidy layering review, which is a process that is triggered by the project-based vouchers. We have the majority of our approvals from our tax credit investor and public partners, and we are looking very good to close on March 4th. Probably the one thing that may delay that is if the subsidy layering review gets held up for any reason or just go slower than anticipated. But if it's not on the 4th, we would expect it to be very soon after that. And then we are looking at a roughly 14-month construction period, so opening in early summer of 2022. Next slide. Some of the, I guess the major change that's occurred that we just wanted to touch on briefly and was also mentioned earlier in the presentation by Jill is that the 4% tax credit rate was fixed. This resulted in an additional $1.35 million in tax credit equity for this project. In our case, the investor did lower our tax credit price slightly. So we didn't get a dollar for dollar increase, but we still got a significant amount of additional equity. We are using the majority of that to add back costs that had been value engineered over the course of the pre-development process due to rising costs. Another rising cost we're seeing right now that we're trying to manage is lumber, which has gone up very significantly. But we were also able to add a resident services reserve here to further support the resident services. And we were able to give back a small amount of bond funds to PhD. Next slide. In terms of our MWESB participation targets, we're right now at 33.3%, with the large majority of that being DMW firms, 32%. So we were happy to be able to exceed the 30% PhD goal in this area. Next slide. Just a note on challenges we have encountered prior to the 4% fix. We had been seeing a lot of challenges with the budget in rising costs, which had led us to cut a number of amenities and other items that we were really happy to be able to add back at the last minute. But we had been seeing costs steadily rise through the course of our design and pre-construction period. And then site challenges, briefly mentioned, this is just a very compact infill site. So just trying to get all the programming and 50 units on the site was a design challenge. We also experienced some challenges with just having campers around the site and some security and safety issues. I think that now that we are underway with the deconstruction, that has largely gone away. But just something we had to manage up until we started that deconstruction process. Next slide. I'm gonna pass it over to Keith now.
Great, thank you, Lucy. Thanks for committee members. I'm Keith Ferrante, he, him, with NAIA Family Center. I wanted to talk a little bit and conclude with our community engagement at NAIA and our partnership with NARA. So we have a targeted outreach, which is very similar to the program we integrated with Nisaika Lehi. And we've are grateful that we were able to expand on our housing advocate staff to support, to provide culturally specific support for Haiutiliksum. And we're really excited about this, the integrated approach, which we are including NARA in. Once again, they're gonna be providing the PSH support and trauma-informed support for our residents. And we're really excited to be able to focus on Native homelessness and providing housing stability. So as part of that, which Lucy mentioned, is that we will have the on-site services with NARA, and then they will also be working in partnership with NAIA staff who will be providing more social services on site, as well as at the NEA Family Center, where we provide many social services from child care, child development. We have the charter school, Many Nations, as well, and we also provide job training services in addition to our food pantry and our energy assistance programs. So we're happy to do that partnership again. We're happy to continue to grow the Coley neighborhood and in collaboration with R42nd and the Business Association, we are providing a employment and business link for residents. And then also we provide small business support through that collaboration. And then I do wanna finish with just to reiterate how Lucy had discussed is that this is the third development with CDP and NEA, and this is our second with CDP and NARA. And we would just like to recognize how unique that is and how strong relationship that is. And I feel like we are a well-suited partnership for providing such demanding and in need services. So thank you all for your time. And thank I will turn it over for questions.
Keith, absolutely. Comments from Bond Oversight Committee members and or questions?
I had a question, Susan Emmons, Bond Oversight Committee member. When you talk about serving homeless Native folks, where are they coming? Where do you find they're coming from? I mean, are they in shelters? Are they outside? How are you finding them?
So with NEA, we are relying on NARA, who is very much in contact with that list. I could probably follow up with the housing services director there, who couldn't be here today, but she, through their work with rehabilitation in the community, they are familiar with the residents who are homeless at this time, and we're gonna be relying on their expertise to help us gather that targeted outreach and goal.
Thank you very much. Comments, any other? Alan.
Dr. Hull, thank you. And Keith and Lucy, thanks for being here today. Such an exciting project. I actually live very near that site and pass through that area all the time. I put a couple of questions in the chat, and I think Keith touched on it a little bit, but I didn't see in the unit mix. I saw there was no manager units, but I'm curious if you're providing on-site support for especially PSH residents, is there space for that? And sometimes I see it included in the unit mix, and sometimes I don't, like a PSH office. And then the other question I put in there, it was really just more a curiosity around the consideration around Indian Housing Block Grant funding and the potential that provides for being able to directly include units that could go to members of the Native community, just like at the other project. So that one's just more a curiosity about whether that had been considered for this project.
Sure. To your first question, yes, we have an on-site manager's office as well as two other, a resident services office and a adjacent meeting room. So we can follow up with those as floor plans if you're interested. But yes, we have a lot of space for on-site staffing, and are planning to have a full-time staff person for those PSH units. In terms of the Indian Housing Block Grant, we do have those funds on the other two projects we're working on. We were, and I don't know if Keith has any other background on this, but I think given that we had to respond pretty quickly to the bond solicitation when it came out from PHB, I think we were just unable to secure a tribal investor in time to add that partner to this team. but it is certainly a great way to be able to ensure that you can give that preference to Native households. In this case, we're just going to be taking more of a outreach approach to make sure we meet that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other comments, either Todd or Annalise?
I don't have any questions. I appreciate just all of the information, but I think these are the types of projects that I think encapsulate when I came into this process was hoping to kind of see come to life. So just appreciation for all the hard work and connections with community-based groups. Apano has been involved with another neighborhood prosperity network with Prosper Portland. So to see kind of the local support from the Cully Boulevard Alliance. I think that's great and a good example of sort of cross bureau collaboration and just appreciate the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Lucy. Thanks, Keith. Appreciate it. Our next group to present.
Yes. Hi, this is Tanya again. Thank you. I want to give thanks to the team from Hayutuluxum. That was great presentation. Great to hear from you. And thank you for joining us today. The next project that we want to present for the committee is the West Wind project. So I want to welcome the team from Central City Concern, and I'll hand it over to them to begin their presentation if they're ready. Going to check real quick to make sure that our team members have joined us today. I don't quite see them yet, so we may want to give them a couple minutes if there's other items to discuss to give them a chance to join us and continue with this presentation, if that's acceptable to everyone.
Well, if you're open to it, what we could do is switch our agenda a little and open it for public testimony and then come back to that. I don't know if that works.
That would be okay with me. Anyone else?
Do we have any public testimony? Anyone signed up for public testimony today?
Dr. Holt, this is Stacy. We had a couple of folks, I'm not sure if they're on the call, but we had a couple of people who indicated they might be interested in providing testimony, and that was a Christopher Masiochi, don't see him on the call, and a Vlad Yorlov. If either of you is on the call, I have your names.
I don't see those names identified in any of the names that I'm looking at.
I don't either.
Okay. We'll give then our partners with the West Wind some moments to arrive and present. Director Callahan, is there any comment for you?
I'm sorry, Dr. Holt. May I just jump in for a quick minute?
Yeah.
Tanya, I have been on texting with the West Wind team. They don't have the Zoom link. Could you help send the Zoom link to Mary Rain and her team?
Yes, I will do that right.
Thank you. Sorry, Dr. Holt.
No, all good.
Thank you.
The one thing I would mention is just, thinking ahead to our next meeting. I think we are just jumping back to a few topics of conversation. You know, we held a reserve very deliberately because of uncertainty with bond closings and where financial markets could be. That was made even more evident to us that it was a good idea to do that, especially with what we were facing with the COVID challenges. But as you know, we are on track to exceed our goals. We still have, it's very clear, apparently now that we will have additional money obviously remaining and be able to hopefully tap into some of those reserves that we've set aside. And so I think, I see Mary Rain O'Meara just joined the call from Central City Concern, but I just wanted you to know that that is some of the thinking that we are starting to prepare for. And I think you can expect that as one of the topics we'll want to be talking with you about at our next quarterly meeting is giving you some of our early thinking and taking your getting some feedback from you and hearing from you about some of the priority areas that we may want to invest in. The positive thing for us, obviously, you know, if everything holds true, is that we've achieved all of our goals or will have achieved all of our goals and exceeded those. And so that gives us some flexibility to look at the priority areas and do some additional prioritization within the confines of the bond funding guidelines from the voters. So just, you know, things to think about. I think we'll be talking to you a little bit more, obviously, about that at our next meeting, but things for you to start to noodle on over the coming months as we get prepared to do more good work. So I will, now that I think Central City's here, I will, and it looks like Mary is actually Jill Chen. We have two Jill Chens for the presentation, but I will turn it over to the project team to talk about this really exciting project.
Thanks, Director Callahan. And right before we do that, just a point of context for agenda. Is the mayor going to be joining us this morning? Do we know?
No.
Okay, so I saw him here for closing remarks and wanted to make sure we had time.
Oh, I think that's, my apologies. I think that is an old addition from the last time. So apologies that is still on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tanya. I wanted to make sure that we left enough time for the mayor. So to our next presenter, Central City Concern, you may want to make the adjustment and rename yourself. So that everyone who sees the recording has your correct name. That would be great if you can. All right.
There you are. And apologies, Mary Rain, for literally the missing link in getting you here today.
No problem. Thank you so much for being patient and for Jill scrambling last minute to get me that link. Are you ready for me to jump in?
We are ready for you.
Great. Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning to the Bond Oversight Committee. I am so pleased to be here today to be updating you all on this very important project, the West Wind. And my name is Mary Rain O'Meara. Thanks for the tip, Dr. Holt, on doing the rename there. I'm the Director of Real Estate Development at Central City Concern. And before I officially launch into the project details, I just want to take a moment to thank the PHB team. What an incredible effort, such an incredible partnership and collaboration on this project. It's a complicated project, a multi-stage, and you'll get a sense of it as I go through the slides. But I just wanted to do a special call out to Jill and John and Faiz and Tanya for all of your support and collaboration. We are so close. And again, I'm just so excited to be here today to be providing this update. So in terms of the West Wind, we are looking at a new rendering for the future building, which will be a 7-story, 100 unit permanent supportive housing building. It's located at Northwest 6th and Flanders in downtown Portland. And it's really close to a number of Central City Concern's headquarters and services offices. For example, our housing office is literally just right across the street from this location. And our Old Town Recovery Center is about a 5-minute walk. So this is really located right within the heart of Central City Concern's, what we like to call our Old Town campus there in this part of the city. So currently there is an existing building at the site that the city purchased, I think a couple of years ago. And Central City Concern has been the property manager in that interim time. All of those existing tenants have been relocated out with the collaboration of Home Forward and Portland Housing Bureau. And so the existing building will be demolished before we can obviously start construction of the new building that you see there. Our development team is Walsh Construction for the general contractor, Works Progress Architecture as the architectural team, and then us at Central City Concern serving as the lead developer for the project. And we can advance to the next slide, please. So as I've mentioned, the new building will have a total of 100 units. 70 of those will be permanent supportive housing that are supported by project-based vouchers coming in from Home Forward. We're very grateful for that additional support and subsidy coming into the project. So just a note on the way the units are presented here, for that 78 that are being shown as 31 to 60% of AMI, I put a note there that actually 70 of those are the units that are supported by project-based vouchers. So even though the rents that are the maximum rent that Home Forward will provide subsidy for is up to 60%, the tenants that live in those units will not be charged any more than 30% of their income. And of course we expect that most of those tenants will come in at zero income, being that the priority for those units are for chronically homeless individuals. So in addition to those permanent supportive housing units, we have 22 units that are in the 24% to 31% of AMI, and then 8 units that are at the 52% AMI. Those units are not supported by vouchers, but we're still keeping them very affordable and accessible, low barrier, affordable housing for the building. For the service providers, it's a partnership between us, Central City Concern, our Imani Center, which provides culturally specific services to the African American community, and NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Association. NARA will provide services for up to 20 households in the building. And again, specifically for those households seeking culturally specific Native American services. So I think I mentioned priority communities, chronically homeless, African American, and Native American. So we can go to the next slide, please. As a funding overview, we have $11 million coming in through Portland Housing Bond. And then in addition to that, we have $4 million coming in through Multnomah County, but via the Portland Housing Bureau. So that overall award is sitting at $14 million. For the LIHTC equity, we have just about $3.5 million. I think there's a typo. That should probably be $13.5 million. In my notes, I think that's what I have. Definitely more than 3.5. So we have $13.5 million in LIHTC equity. And then we are getting in a combination of some grants from Oregon Housing and Community Services, and then a little bit of contribution coming in through us as the project sponsor, mostly via our deferred developer fee. So we do have a gap that we have submitted a request over to Shannon at Portland Housing Bureau for consideration, and I'll talk about what constitutes that gap in just a moment. But at a high level, there were some discoveries regarding existing building and site conditions that we made after we were awarded the project and had an opportunity to do more detailed due diligence. So we can go ahead and advance, please. So we are right now at the pre-development stage. We're headed towards an April 15th closing and construction start, so just a couple months out. We have received our environmental review clearance from HUD. Because this project has project-based vouchers, we have to go through a couple of extra stages of federal review, which not all projects have. It's the project-based vouchers which trigger those required reviews. So we've crossed the first hurdle, which is the environmental review, and we've just submitted what's called the subsidy layering review package over to Home Forward, and that will be the second and final level of federal review. So we're anticipating that to take about 6 weeks and get that approval in before we get to project closing. So let's see, for partners, I've mentioned NARA, I've mentioned Home Forward. We're also very fortunate to have a partnership with the Joint Office of Homeless Services on this project. We'll be receiving annual operating subsidy that allows us to really robustly staff the building with supportive services personnel to provide the deep level of services that the tenants will require both at entry and then over the long term of their stay and permanent residence at this building. And I've mentioned our general contractor and architect and our closing date. So we can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so let's just do a little bit of a dive into what has been some material changes and what has constituted our additional request for some funding. So I mentioned that there's an existing building at the site at 6th and Flanders. That building shares what's called a party wall with the building to the south. So literally the south wall of the existing building is the north wall of the adjacent building. So when you're in the units of that building, the brick is the west wind building. So this was quite, the extent of it was a discovery again, just in terms of what would be required to physically separate these two buildings in order for us to demolish the existing building. So we have work underway through Walsh. They are building a new interior from the interior of the adjacent building. They're constructing a new wall for that building, Everett Station Lofts, so that we will be able to physically separate and demolish the existing west wind. So that wall is being, again, constructed from the interior of the adjacent building. Right now, as we speak, that's underway. And when we are at the point of demolishing the existing west wind, Walsh will go in and finish out the exterior of that new wall in the envelope. So again, this has been one element that has added some scope and cost to the project, but clearly essential in order for us to proceed with construction of the new building. And then in terms of, I think I have more detail on the next slide on the other element, but in terms of some good news, I was just gonna mention the 4% rate lock, which has been incredible for our industry and has brought additional equity into the project. So fortunately that's reduced the gap. We would have had a larger gap request, but because that's brought additional equity into the project, we were able to make a reduced request. Okay, on to the next, and I'll talk about, so I spoke about the shared party wall. You know, it's just so interesting in the course of these projects, the things you learn, especially working in historic Old Town. So apparently there used to be these gasometer tanks that would hold natural gas, and they were constructed throughout cities in the United States. Large, if you look up gasometer, you'll see some of these structures. There used to be one at this site at 6th and Flanders before the existing west wind was built in the early 1900s. That was taken down in order to build the building, but they left the foundation to that gasometer tank several feet underground. So it is 70 feet in diameter. It's a large, just imagine, concrete structure that we can't remove. So what we are doing is taking a different foundation approach using what's called micropiles that will allow the team to essentially drill through that existing condition and create a structurally sound foundational approach. Because we didn't know about the slab, you know, when we went in for award, our foundation was a little bit more straightforward, and that's been another element that's added some cost that constitutes that gap. All right, let's move on to the next slide, please. Okay, so in terms of our equity contracting goals, Walsh is projecting a 31.7% achievement for the hard costs. And on the soft costs, we are sitting at 76% utilization. Let's see, so Walsh has wrapped up their bidding period as of last week. The project is generating a lot of interest, which is great news. Out of the 160 bids they received, 40 were COBID certified. They've advertised the bid opportunity widely to over 10 minority specific subcontractor organizations. In addition to that, they sent out direct notices to 2,800 certified bidders in their database. So they are confident that they'll be able to reach at a minimum that 30% of equity on the hard costs utilization, and hopefully just a little bit more. Again, they're projecting right now the 31.7% achievement rate. All right, so let's move on to the final slide, please. So for community engagement, during the design process, we went out and spoke to a lot of groups in the neighborhood. But first, I'll start with our culturally specific partners. So I mentioned the Amani Center, which is a CCC program. They have been engaged in terms of informing the design and eventual programming at the building, in addition to NARA. It was really important to get their input around, you know, at CCC, we always take a trauma-informed approach, but having their input, you know, going beyond that in terms of what are some design elements that translate into more culturally enriched and specific for those communities we intend to serve in the building. Other outreach and engagement involved the Old Town Community Association. There's a very active community association in Old Town. The dynamic is such that it's really important to be engaged and communicate the value of a project such as West Wind. And so we've maintained consistent communication and have received really great input on design and just how this new building will interact with the existing community there in Old Town. Across the street from the West Wind is the headquarters for the organization called CARE, which some of you are probably familiar with. They work with homeless youth, specifically providing arts programming. And so this was one group that we reached out early to, just, you know, as a neighbor, as another organization, serving a similar population, to get their input. I mentioned our neighbors, the Everett Station Lofts, who were actually working inside their building, but just in general wanted their input on design. And then Amani Center, NARA. We also met with Central City Concern has a resident advisory board. So I went and spoke to them with the architects and got really great input. It's a wide group of residents from across our portfolio. So they spoke about everything from building security to the importance of community amenities, and really helped inform that early design. So finally, for prospective residents, you know, I've mentioned our culturally specific priorities and the partners we're working with. We do have the joint office as a partner, as I mentioned, so we'll also be working with the coordinated access system to lease up the 70 permanent supportive housing units. They have been a great and very collaborative partner with us, thinking through, you know, just existing hurdles in that system and how people are showing up. And, you know, we're problem solving around, making sure that the clients we want to prioritize are either on that list and represented, or that we've got some flexibility to advocate for members of those culturally specific communities that are chronically homeless and would otherwise qualify for housing at this new building. So I think that is it for me, and I'm happy to take questions if we have time for that.
We've got time. Thank you very much for the presentation. Questions, comments from BOC?
Thank you for your presentation. Very exciting project and really well needed. I had a question about unit size. Are they SRO units or are they studios?
Yeah, so 72 of the units are SRO, single room occupancy. So they're approximately 200 square feet. One of the shifts in design we've had to adapt to is lessons from COVID. So originally we were building in shared community kitchens. And what we've done is pivoted to more self-sustaining kitchenettes in each of the SRO units, just based on our experience. We operate a lot of SRO buildings currently. So we do still have those community rooms on each floor, but we've pivoted away from sort of more of that shared kitchen to providing more full kitchenettes within the SROs. And then each of those units has their own toilet and sink. On each of those floors, there are single shower rooms. So just one door and one shower, four on each floor. And then the remainder of the units are studio.
Excellent, thank you. Other questions, Bond Oversight Committee? Questions or comments?
Dr. Holt, it's Alan Lazo.
Okay.
Hey, thanks, Mary. I appreciate the presentation. And this is actually, this is such an amazing project. This is only a kind of a weird, I don't know that this presentation will be presented anywhere else than here for us. But just the piece about the project-based vouchers and how we're counting the 30%, because I went back to the dashboard that we have, and this actually may be for PHB, because it did show those as 30% units, which I think is fair. And so I'm just, again, I don't know that it'll ever come up again in how it's actually being counted, but I appreciate the explanation and just want to make sure that those two things kind of sync up as we continue to move that narrative forward about who we're serving in these buildings, because I think it's a really important point. And so I don't know, to me, it seems like being able to convey it at that 30% level without really having to explain that makes sense to me, kind of the way they did in the dashboard. But I don't know. I don't know if that's a conversation you all have had with PHB. And again, I'm not sure it matters if, outside of here.
Hi, yeah, it's Alan. Go ahead, Jill.
Hi, Alan. I'm just going to jump in because I think this is maybe the representation of the dashboard versus a representation in the presentation. And what it is when Mary Rain presented the 60% as the reimbursement, that's what they're getting from Home Forward. Under the regulatory agreements for the PSH, we put them at 30%. And if the project-based vouchers goes away, because our rents are regulated for 99 years and the project-based vouchers are not for 99 years. So we do have that ability to float up so that if the rent, the project-based vouchers go away, our developers can slowly raise the rents up. So yes, it's a matter of presentation, and appreciate your eagle eye, I guess, in catching that. It's a bit confusing because of that representation.
That's important context, I think, though, Jill. Appreciate that. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And again, it's an important factor in how we advocate also for that support from Home Forward and the project-based vouchers, frankly, right? Because that's a pretty good example of that.
Exactly. And if the developers and our projects do not have the project-based vouchers, yeah, it would be extremely difficult to serve the homeless population. They I mean, the folks that Mary Rain and Lucy were talking about are folks who are probably not having any income. So without the vouchers, it's really hard.
Does that get played out at all in the pro formas for the development? Or I'm assuming the assumption there is made, is there an assumption made about the project-based vouchers for a certain time period?
We do. And we work with Mary Rain and Lucy and our developers, as well as with their investors, their light tech investors, as well as their senior lenders, so that in the pro formas, it comes in at 30%. I mean, not 30, 60% rents, because otherwise the lenders will never provide the loans.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's great context.
Oh, Mary Rain, did you want to add?
I think you covered it. My only comment was, you know, it's a really good point, Alan, and I think it's about audience, right? And I'll say more generally, when I'm out in the community, I do describe this as, you know, deeply affordable, 30% units, as Jill referenced, you know, it's really that nuance with the pro forma, where what we present is actually the higher voucher rent to get the underwriting in place.
I think it is important, though, the point that Jill made is we know that without subsidies, we can't serve this population. And,
right.
I think that's a narrative we need to repeat, and that's a role that, frankly, government can play. So.
I'd like to just say that in response to your unit design, I really applaud you for pivoting in light of COVID and doing a toilet and a sink and a kitchenette in each unit. I think that's just so crucial for people who are really getting a new start and giving them dignity in their housing. And I know it can be done in 200 square feet. I've seen it. So I think that's great. I had one other question. What timeline do you allow for lease up in a building like this? I mean, given who you're going to serve and the supportive services they're going to need, do you have an idea in mind of that?
We do, absolutely. So for this project, we are giving ourselves 6 months to get the project fully leased. I'll say, you know, in more kind of typical housing, you might see it as short as a 3-month lease up period. But because we're working with the joint office as our referral partner, in addition to Nara and Amani, we just know there's the need to get things right and make sure that we have sufficient time for those waiting lists to be built up and for us to work through that process. We also, as the developer, I hate to have staff stressed out. I'll just say from previous experience, the last thing you want is your lease up staff, you know, scrambling and feeling like they're not able to do what they need to do. And, you know, we all want to serve the mission here and lease up the building for the intended and required population, but give us that room to do it in a comfortable and efficient way.
Yeah, well, again, I applaud you for allowing 6 months. I mean, just years ago when I was at Northwest Pilot Project, we did a new project, 12th Avenue Terrace, that was owned by REACH, and it was 118 units designed for seniors leaving homelessness. And we also had 6 months, and we needed every bit of those 6 months,
yeah,
you know, to do it right, to identify people who were homeless, and get them into the buildings. So I know some people thought, oh, that building's never going to be full, but it really, I think that's just realistic, and I'm really glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Excellent. Any other comments?
I have one. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're a bond oversight committee member. So you before me.
So thank you. For this great presentation, it was really helpful to kind of walk through it and walk through all the pieces and kind of understand the different moving parts around the financing pieces. And I think my question actually might be more for PHB, which is trying to understand the next steps and timeline around the gap financing issue and what that piece looks like.
Annalise, thank you. And I think Jill can follow up with me a little bit, but as you might recall, as part of our process that we shared with you earlier, we do ask for formal requests to change
from the award that had been previously given. We will be making those decisions in the next week. But what I will tell you is, I just wanted to say that because I have a Central City Concern on the call, I wanted to express my deep appreciation to the Central City Concern team. This is a challenging project from the development perspective, as you've heard. Party walls, gasometers, who knew? I didn't even know what they were. And then also Central City Concern has been a partner with us since we took possession of the property. So they were managing on site the tenants, the existing tenants at the West Wind, and working alongside our relocation experts. I will say that I think this was one of the most challenging relocations that any of us have ever experienced, and was made even more challenging in the environment of COVID. So I just wanted to take that moment to really thank Central City for hanging in there. When some timelines were changing, things that were out of your control based on the pandemic, and just your true appreciation to your team for so wonderfully working with all of the residents and making that building safe as long as we could. So please, I hope you hear that from me, Mary Rain, and take that back to your team, because we are just so grateful. You guys did an excellent job. And then I'll let Jill follow up more on the question of the actual increase. But we do have a process in lease, and we will be going through that. And I will say that I am comfortable that there is a need for us to come in with additional gap funding. So.
Thank you, Shannon. And I would also reiterate or repeat everything Shannon said about Central City Concern and the partnership with Central City Concern. When PHB looked at the site, there were a number of things that Mary Rain mentioned. Likewise, I never knew something about gasometer. I mean, and it's how big it was. I mean, it covers 75% of the site. That's unusual for PHB. I've seen gas tanks many times, but something this big, this unwieldy, and the creativity that Mary Rain and her team had was incredible. Their design team and Central City Concern and Walsh looked at this in every which way. The seismic issues were significant. They worked incredibly well with Everett Street Lofts, the next door, which is also an affordable housing actually, to essentially build another wall. Those were incredible. And I really appreciate their work with John and Fias and the rest of PHB team and Tanya and Molly in the relocation. In terms of the actual next steps, we have a request from Central City Concern listing out the cost differential and why there is additional cost, and itemizing the areas where these, you can call it extraordinary site conditions, came into play, be it for the party wall and the stabilization of that party wall or the gasometer, things like the holding cost, because there's gonna be a little bit of a break and we're gonna have to lay it all out. And that comes up to a certain amount that actually exceeds the 1.18 that Mary Rain listed in her presentation to you. And partly because of the LIHTC 4%, PHB's, you can call it, incremental cost is now shrunk down to 1.18. If we didn't have that, it would be much, much higher. And I applaud Central City Concern, and especially from the PHB side, FIAS, in working with BDS to figure out what is available, what can we do based on code, so that we don't have to, we can pick the most cost-effective way to manage that extraordinary site condition. So once CCC's memo to us, I think there's some other issues that we're looking at to finalize this. Once that's finalized,
The team, myself and John, will send Shannon a sort of review memo about the costing and the reasonableness of it and how does it play in the overall, and call it bond metrics and the importance of it. And Shannon will work with leadership and commissioners and reach out to you all in terms of what that means for this project. Does that help you, Annalise?
Thanks, Jill. Thanks, Shannon. Any other comments from Bond Oversight? Alan?
Dr. Holt, it's Alan again, Lazo. I got to jump off at 11 for another meeting, but I just want to say, you know, I think we sort of knew with this West Wind, I remember conversations from the very beginning. This is a complicated project. It's a complicated site, a complicated area, but it's also a vital project. And so I don't think we're sort of surprised that we are where we are. And to some degree, you know, I think we're in better shape than we thought where we might be. And so there have been a lot of complexities along the way. Again, great credit to PHB and Central City Concern. But I remember conversations that this was, important and difficult. So, yeah. I think we are where we are. So appreciate the work y'all are doing.
Well, thank you. And Alan, you did highlight the fact we are at time. And I want to thank everyone for your involvement and engagement today. I want to be responsible and responsive to the reality that probably all of us are in that space of right up against moments. Unfortunately, we're not going to have another opportunity for public testimony. Let me encourage anyone who has public testimony to submit it via email or reach out to the PHB staff and share your thoughts. Our next engagement, the next time we come together, is in April, and it will be an evening meeting, and we're looking forward to connecting. Thanks, guys, for all of the work that you do. And to end again with another quote, and that is from attributed to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It is always the right time to do the right thing. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Talk to everyone.
And everyone.